Behold, I will spit you out of my mouth, verse 17, for you say, I am rich, I have prospered, and I need nothing, not realizing that you are wretched, pitiable, poor, blind, and naked. Next slide, please. So what we see is that you have this church here in Laodicea, and what we need to know about them as far as background goes, the first thing is they're very wealthy people. You have a few different things that their economy revolved around. The first one being this eye salve, eye ointment that they innovated for medicinal purposes that they sold. And then along with that, this really sleek, they bred sheep that had this amazing black wool that they would use to make black cloth. And as you know, with anything historically, that if it was something that was rare, if it was something that was hard to come by, it was two things. One, worn by rich people, and two, expensive. So their entire livelihood, their entire economy revolved around that. They were very wealthy, so much so that there was an earthquake that came through and it absolutely wiped out a lot of these cities that were written to here in Revelation chapter 2 and 3. And what you saw, like, historically, the pattern was that when someone got hit by this earthquake and someone got destroyed, the first thing they did was they would call out and call in favors left and right. Call this king, call that kingdom, call that guy that owes me that favor, and get everything they need, all the supplies, all the money that they need to restore their city, to get back to where they were at. And everyone did it, except for Laodicea. Laodicea was already so well off and so wealthy that they were the type of people that picked themselves up off the ground, that were self-sufficient, that brought themselves up by their bootstraps, and then built their city back. And they were very proud of that. They were very proud of how wealthy they were. They were very proud of how self-sufficient they were. And so that's what you see here with this reference in verse 17 when they say, I am rich, I have need of nothing. But what Christ says, not so much. You're not rich. You're poor and wretched and pitiable because of their lukewarm faith. The other thing that we need to know is that they have lukewarm water. Now, what you see, there's no river that runs through Laodicea. There's no wells. There's no springs. And what they had to do was they had to pipe in their water from 5 miles away. And what happens is when you have this proud group of people that are self-sufficient, but then the most basic necessity of water, their water wasn't as good as everybody else's. Because you had some over here that were a few miles one way that had really cold water coming straight out of streams. You had some that were a few miles the other way that had these really hot springs. And so they were kind of caught in the middle where they didn't have much of either. They were left with lukewarm second-grade water. The basic necessity of water for the people in Laodicea wasn't as good as other people's water elsewhere. And they were downright embarrassed of it. Because they were self-sufficient. They were self-made. They were wealthy. They were great. But their water wasn't as good as everybody else's. And the same way that they were embarrassed by their water quality that they were having to drink is how Jesus felt about their lukewarm spirituality and their lukewarm faith. And it leads us to the question, how many times has fine been good enough for God? Jesus explained to them that their lukewarm Christianity was not going to cut it. They were Christians, weren't they? I mean, there wasn't anything that bad to report, because you see a lot of churches in these first two chapters of the book of Revelation that Jesus has things that he just hounds them on, and things they need to fix, and things where they fall short. But at the same time, even though they didn't have all those bad qualities, there wasn't anything to write home about. There wasn't any outstanding work that they had been part of. There wasn't anything that set them apart from the crowd. And they were just stuck in this awkward limbo, in this awkward middle of just being fine spiritually. I mean, they went to church every time the doors were open. They were even here on Sunday nights. They went through the motions. They sang songs. They attended class. They worshiped together. But it takes more than just the motions. It takes more than just being at the right place in the right time in the right pattern. It takes more than being fine. Next slide. So how much longer are we going to be able to relate with these people? How much longer are we going to settle for being fine? And when is it going to come to a point where we realize there has to be some kind of passion and some kind of zeal and something better than fine in our lives spiritually in order for us to grow, in order for us to get to heaven? There's got to be something there. There's got to be something more. And that's what we're going to talk about. And that's what we're going to look at this evening. what tends to happen, we're very much like the church in Laodicea. Okay, we're Americans. Whether you know this or not, I'll break it to you this evening. You're wealthy. You're very wealthy. Whether you're sitting in this pews or whether you have been blessed in some form or fashion to be able to go to a $30,000 a year university, you are wealthy, period. There's no way around that. There's no way to avoid that. You're in the same spot as the people in Laodicea. And what you find is that a lot of times we fall into the same rut that they did, the same pattern that they did. Why? Because when you're wealthy, you have certain habits that you create in order to get there. Certain responsibilities that you feel. If you've made something of yourself or done something with your life, whether it is an occupation, whether it is on a sports team, no matter what it is, there are habits that you've created in order to get there. And what happens is when I get into a habit of doing something right, I don't change it. You know why? You don't fix what's not broken. And so we get into a daily routine of doing all the things that we need to do in order to fulfill our responsibilities, all the things that we need to do in order to fulfill our roles, and we just kind of, we tack on our spirituality at the end. And we add our spirituality on this checklist that we have. And we make it something that becomes as routine as going to work or as routine as spending time with family. And guys, there's got to be something more than just routine with your spirituality. There's got to be, with your relationship with God, there's got to be something more than routine. You've got to be coming here and you've got to be in that seat right now for more of a reason than it's just what I do every Sunday night at 5 o'clock. We can't find ourselves in the same position as the people of Laodicea. We can't find ourselves in a place where we're fine, because fine is going to spiritually kill you. Being stuck in limbo and stuck in the middle and lukewarm is going to eventually be so unfulfilling, and you're going to have such a lack of spiritual growth that it's going to be like a chokehold, and it's going to stay there. And it's going to stay there until death. So what we need to do is we need to look at, well, how do I avoid it? Obviously, we've seen Laodicea. We've seen how Jesus views Laodicea. He even says it to him. It says, I spit you out of my mouth. He's appalled. He thinks it's atrocious. He doesn't love it. So how do I do the opposite? How do I go the other direction? And that is what we're going to be seeing here as far as 1 Peter, as far as being on fire, as far as being zealous. And there it is. See, what you see is people think when they start, when they make this decision, they sit in the middle of a sermon like this, or they read a passage like this one, or they sit in a Bible class that's along the same lines, and they say to themselves, all right, this is it. This is where I'm going to change. This is where I'm going to start growing. This is where I'm going to turn my life around spiritually. This is where everything is going to start looking up. And they think that they have to leave here and go to bed tonight and wake up tomorrow and be like this living epitome of perfection. I think they've got to wake up and tomorrow be Paul or be Jesus or be Peter or be whoever. And that's not the case at all. What we're going for here and what we're looking at and what it means to be on fire for God, what it means to be passionate, what it means to be convicted in some sort of way, isn't about waking up tomorrow and being perfect. It's about waking up tomorrow and being better than you were yesterday. So the question we're going to answer for the rest of this evening is, how do I wake up tomorrow as a better person than I am right now? Because as I said, it's not about being just like Jesus, just like that. What it is about is driving to work tomorrow a more devout Christian than you were yesterday. It's about waking up and going to class and being a better disciple than you were yesterday. It's about coming here to this place and it not being about a routine, it not being about emotion, but being about your own personal growth. You're here for you. You're here for God. You're not here out of any other obligation or any other kind of routine. And that's what Peter talks about here in 2 Peter chapter 1. It's not very far from where we are in Revelation. Verses 3 through 8. 2 Peter chapter 1, starting in verse 3, it says, His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us to His own glory and excellence, for which He has granted to us His precious and very great promises, so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped from the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire. For this very reason, here we go, Make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with steadfastness, and steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. For if these qualities are yours and are increasing, they will keep you from being ineffective and unfruitful in the knowledge of Jesus Christ. It's a matter of looking at where you're at spiritually. It's a matter of evaluating where you're at spiritually. And it's a matter of growing based off of where you're at right now. Not being lukewarm, not being fine, not going through the motions, but saying, here's where I am, here's where I want to be, and here's what I have to supplement along the way to get from where I am to where I want to be. And Peter is such a great example of that. Pause, I'm going to bend down and pick these up. Resume. Peter, if you look at where that passage, that same opening, the end of 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 1, he says what? He talks about eldership. He says, I am a fellow elder. What does that mean? Look at all the qualifications that it takes to be an elder. You have to be temperate. You have to be self-controlled. You have to have a handle on your temper. A lot of things that we typically don't associate with Peter. Peter is the perfect person to be talking about growth, because his entire life, what we see from the first time that he's addressed in the Bible to the very last time where he's writing these two epistles, is this big, long chain of growth. His entire life is. Because you go from this Peter that is a fisherman, that is sticking his foot in his mouth all the time, that is always messing up, to an elder in the church that wrote two epistles. There's got to be something in between those two things. There's got to be some kind of growth. And how did he do it? How did he go from the Peter that denied Jesus to the Peter that was an elder and a preacher in his church? How did he go from the Peter that couldn't keep his eyes on Jesus and started to sink in the water, didn't have enough faith to keep his eyes on Jesus, go from that guy to the guy that preached the first gospel sermon on the day of Pentecost? How does that happen? He was willing to dig deeper in his spirituality. He was willing. He asked a lot of questions. If you want to look at it, have you ever heard of the saying that what comes from the mouth proceeds from the heart? The idea, it's in Matthew chapter 15, verse 18, where Jesus says the thought process of what you say and what you speak is directly connected to your heart, because out of your heart is your intentions, and out of your intentions are your words. You know what's funny about that passage? Jesus never would have said that had Peter not asked a question beforehand. Go even further down into Matthew chapter 18. Have you ever heard someone say that you shall forgive your brother not seven times, but 77 times? When Jesus says that, he would have never said that had Peter not asked a question just a few verses prior. If you go down even further, the first shall be last, the last shall be first, in Matthew chapter 19. Never would have happened if Peter not asked a question. Never would have happened if Peter not had enough of a want and enough of a drive and enough of a will and enough of a conviction to dig deeper and ask those questions. And what you see, and this is my favorite part of the entire story of Peter, is while everyone is looking at Peter and while everyone is pointing at Peter and everyone's saying, that's the guy that always sticks his foot in his mouth. That's the guy that Jesus asks those questions and Jesus always puts him in his place. That's that fisherman that just doesn't know any better. While everyone is looking at Peter and pointing at Peter and looking at thinking those things about Peter, Peter's in the background growing, because Peter's not too big, Peter's not too good to ask the questions that he needs to ask in order to grow spiritually. I think sometimes we get scared of people pointing fingers at us and why they point fingers at Peter. I think we get scared of asking the questions that we really want to ask. I think we get scared of digging deeper, because if we look like we need to dig deeper, or we look like we need to grow, then we have to let down this veil of perfection. We have to let down this veil of being a Christian that has everything together. Peter was willing to admit that he doesn't have everything together, and he was willing to dig deeper, and he was willing to ask questions that no one else would ask, even if it caused him looking dumb in the process. Are you at a spot that is too scared to ask questions and dig deeper, or are you like Peter and know that the only way I'm going to grow is if I ask questions and then I go and I get the answer? Next slide, please. We really like to invest time in things. There's something in your life that you give time to. There's something in your life that you give devotion to. If you look at it like this, we invest in everything. Look at the phone in your pocket. You're if tell me, please, raise your hand if you have the same phone in your pocket that you had 10 years ago. There's going to be a few, some here, some older people that always are like, got you, preacher, put you in your place. Always, 10 times out of 10. But why don't you have the same phone in your pocket that you had 10 years ago? Because it's not compatible with the same phones today. You can't send it the same kind of message. I cannot send a text message on one of those big brick phones that you plug into a car lighter. You can't do it. Things have to upgrade. Things have to evolve. And if they don't upgrade and they don't evolve, what happens? They stop working. They stop becoming relevant. And what you see is we are willing to invest and we are willing to upgrade and we are willing to put time and devotion and money into our phones, into our possessions, into our belongings, into our relationships with everybody else, but we're sitting around with the same relationship with God that we had in 1995 back in Mike. It's all fine. Where are we going to say that that's enough? Where are we going to say that okay, fine is not where I want to be anymore? Where's your breaking point, I guess, is what we're getting at this point in the sermon. Because there's got to be a place in order for you to grow, in order for you to dig deeper, where you've got to invest the same amount of time, the same amount of energy, the same amount of love that Peter did into your own spiritual life. Not settling to find, not looking at it the same way the people in Laodicea did, not being something that Christ spits out of his mouth, but something bigger, something better. Next slide, please. There is no way that you're ever going to be more than fine if you don't grow. And the only way to grow is to change. So I'm going to leave that very, very open-ended for you. Because as we go back to what we were talking about with our habits and going through the same motion and the same routine, the one thing that I don't want to happen is I don't want to come up here and give you the three steps or the three keys or the three magic ways that every one of you can apply like a cookie cutter to make yourself grow. And all that do is you say in your mind mentally, all right, there's three things that I just need to add to my list that I need to check off like everything else. No! It can't be something that is just another part of the list. It can't be something that is just another part of the routine. It's got to be self-evaluation. It's got to be knowing exactly what I need to do in order to grow. And that's going to be different for every person in this room. But the one thing that has to be the same is you have to have a love for Jesus bigger than anything else. You have to have a conviction bigger than anything else. And you have to be able to look past and work through any sense of lukewarmness, any sense of mediocrity. And without that change, we will always be stuck as fine. Next slide, please. As for the invitation, I was in my freshman fall semester, and I walked into a Bible class, and it wasn't one of Brother Billy's or Brother Roy's, but there was a girl that I sat behind, and every single day, every Monday and Wednesday, for an entire semester. I sat behind her and watched her on her iPad playing Bejeweled. And if you don't know what Bejeweled is, you really don't have to get the illustration. I'll explain it to you anyway. It's this game where it's a grid, okay? Columns and rows, a grid of all these different colored jewels. And the point and the purpose of said game is you click two of them and they switch. And what you're trying to do is get all the same colored jewels together and you get points. I have no idea how she kept the attention span to play such a game for so long. But anyway, what I noticed is time went on, and it was like every Monday and Wednesday, I would walk in and sit down, and she'd be playing. I'd get up and walk out, she'd still be playing. I don't know if she does anything else ever. But what I will say is there was one time when the professor was passing out papers, and he was walking towards the back of the classroom. And as he got close, she really quickly locked her screen. And you know what I saw? Every person in here that has ever had kids and windows at the same time knows exactly what I saw. Because what happens when these come in contact with glass? Fingerprints. There were fingerprints left in an exact grid on that iPad screen. And they were left in such a manner, in such a way that I didn't have to see her playing Bejeweled to know exactly what she had been doing. I didn't have to catch her and watch her in the middle of a game, in the middle of a class, to know that just by looking at that screen and seeing those fingerprints left on that glass, what she'd been up to and what she had been investing in and where her time had been going. So what I'm going to ask you this evening is, spiritually, where have your fingerprints been left? Have they been left? Because wherever they have been left is going to lead to wherever you are spiritually. And what you have to realize is you can't leave your fingerprints in the exact same place and expect a different result spiritually. You have to be able to see where they go and where to put them and where they need to be left and where your time and where your effort and where your devotion and where your love and your growth needs to be going in order to be more than five. Quite possibly this evening there's something in you, something in your life that is a big hindrance, that is a big stumbling block, something that you're done with, you're tired of, you're over it, and you want prayers to the church to help get through that. Know that there is no better way to gain support, to gain help, to gain that emotional help than prayer of the church. That's why we're here. James 5:16, confess your faults one to another, and we'll pray the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Quite possibly, you have not even been baptized yet, and there is something in God's word that you saw that you realized I'm not okay with being fine. I'm not okay with being another part of the crowd. I'm ready to stand up. I'm ready to grow. I'm ready to develop, and I'm. First step in doing that is by putting Jesus Christ on in baptism. Acts 2:38, they asked on the day of Pentecost, after the first sermon, what do we do now? And Peter said, repent. You be baptized, every single one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins. If you have any need, whether it be prayers, whether it be baptism, please make that known as together we stand and as we sing the invitation.